I don't know how many of you remember the gramophone record. At least I do. Yeah, the horn comes and there's the, you know, that, and then you place the needle on it and then it rotates. Right. So suppose you have a record and you're putting the needle and playing it on it. Suppose that record is filled with, you know, violent music, rock music, hard rock, or some person giving a very hateful, violent speech, talk, and you place the needle on it. What are you going to get? You're going to get exactly what, you know, you have put in there. It will move and it will play that kind of music. And you remove that. Say, if you could delete the record, or you remove the record and you put another record which has very soft, you know, classical music, some beautiful sounds of nature, or some loving, you know, message, or some. And then you place the needle on it, that's what you will get, you know. So the kind of music will depend on what has been placed in the record. So similarly, in our life, the needle is the ego, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker. And the gramophone record is the vasanas, my tendencies, my habits, my desires. And a person who has very negative tendencies, a lot of anger and hatred and selfishness and competition and taking from others and stealing, when the ego comes in contact with his or her personality, which is full of hate and negativity, what will happen is these vasanas, which are tendencies in the subconscious mind, in the intellect become desires, in the mind they become thoughts, and then at the body level they become actions. So when an ego is in contact with such a tendencies in his mind, that gramophone record which is full of negativity, what is going to happen? They're going to generate negative thoughts, negative desires, and ultimately negative actions. But the same individual, if he or she can consciously work on these vasanas and say, look, all my life I have been doing the wrong thing, thinking the wrong way. And maybe he comes in contact with a wise person or some knowledge of a prophet or a saint and decides to change. And slowly he cleans out his gramophone record, removes the negative vasanas, and fills it with positive vasanas of love and compassion and kindness and sharing. Then what's going to happen? That same perceiver, feeler, and thinker, that same ego, the needle, when comes in contact with this particular tendency, then the music that's going to come out is love, you know, compassion. So the desires will be pure, the thoughts will be pure, and the actions will be pure. So it's our choice as to what kind of record we want to make our life, what kind of gramophone record is to be made in my life. And that is the message of this particular chapter, the 20th, which is talks about developing the positive mind. I've tried to give ideas that are not in the book so that you can read the book later on. But I'm trying to mostly cover, get the basis from that, but then try to give other ideas so that, you know, that becomes additional. And then, of course, you should go home and read this particular chapter, or you can read before you come. So they say the garden is like the mind. Like, say again, the same example. Say if I inherit a piece of land that is full of weeds, full of dirt, full of junk, then what do? I pull out the weeds and I till the ground and I clean it and I remove the stones. Now that is alone is not enough. If I have removed the weeds and the stones and cleaned the ground, it's not going to be enough. I have to turn around, because if I just remove the weeds and leave the land as it is, sooner or later the weeds are going to come back. So I have to do a positive thing of putting good flowers, fruits, better trees, you know, bushes, so that make the ground pretty. So similarly, the mind, one is to clean it of negativity, which we can work on. But then that they say an empty mind is a devil's workshop. I have removed all the negativity. So I say from today, I won't hate anybody. I won't hurt anybody. I won't be selfish. I won't be angry. I'll be, okay, that is good. But then you say, I won't do all the negative things. Then what? Are you going to sit and do nothing? And that's what often happens, that people decide they're not going to be negative. But then I have to turn around and start doing positive things with my mind, because an empty mind will soon fill with negative thoughts, just as an empty land fills up with weeds. So the mind which was all this time thinking negative, I have to consciously think positive. I shouldn't say I won't be jealous anymore. That's good. But I should say I will rejoice in another person's success and help that person to be successful. I won't say I won't be angry anymore. No, I should be positive. I'll be more loving, more compassionate, praise others. I'll be willing to, I won't take from others, that's one. But no, I will actually positively contribute to others, be a positive contributor to society. So the mind has to be filled with positivity. And that is the essence of today's talk, that first clean the mind of the negatives. And then consciously, and how do we do that? With contact with books, with contact with wise people, reading good literature, listening to good talks, consciously meditating on these thoughts. It's not only enough to listen to the thoughts from wise people, but then go home and contemplate, meditate, and then slowly bring that into your life. So that is called removing the negativity and filling your mind with positive ideas, so that a mind which is all the time filled with anger, hatred, jealousy, you start filling it with love, compassion, and kindness. And another place I was reading Pooja Gurudev's article, he says there are, how does such a person work in the world? One whose mind was first very negative, selfish, and when he or she transforms their mind, how do they work in the world? So he describes there are three kinds of people: laborer, worker, and person of achievement. So laborer, worker, and person of achievement. So what is the difference between three kinds of people? So laborer does not mean one who works in a factory or works in a field. His definition of laborer is one who's only working for me, myself, and I, or for my family. That is that person's whole goal in life. He could be a worker in the field. He could be a manager in a company. He could be a CEO. He could be a senator. He could be a congressman. He could be a president. He could be a governor. It doesn't matter. You know, he could be even a church leader, you know, a priest or a monk. If his only goal in life is what is in it for me, and we find that happens even in great people who are in very powerful positions, presidents and prime ministers and senators, when their whole goal of working is, what am I going to get out of it? That's where it yields corruption and dishonesty and cheating. So such people are called laborers. It doesn't matter where they are. And their whole goal is, how can I make a better house for myself, for my family? How can I buy a better car, more furniture, more? And even if they make money, their whole idea is to make themselves comfortable. So those people are called laborers. The second person is called a worker. Now this person has an ideal, a goal in life. He's not only working for myself, but is working for a higher goal, to improve society. So the person becomes a social worker or a volunteer, or even he or she goes into politics, it is with the idea that I should make this country better, make this state better, make this county better, depending on what kind of office they're working. Even if they are head of a company, the idea is that the company should not only make a profit, but the company should contribute to the betterment of society, so that they will do a lot of, you know, community activities and donations and charity and all. And their goal in life is to make this world a better place. So that is the second. And these people are more unselfish. They are more giving, more compassionate. And so this is an improvement on the laborer, whose only goal is selfishness. But then how can there be a third category called the person of achievement? We have already covered two, right? person, so that the majority of the people in this world fall in this category, the laborer, majority, I would say 90% of the people in the world are just looking out for number one. There are a few who become leaders who want to make the better place, and they have a desire that I'm going to improve this world. But who are the persons of achievement? Those people are extremely rare. And they are the Buddhas and the Christs and the Shankaracharyas and the Birabhais and the Mahatma Gandhis. They are the people whose person like Buddha or Jesus, when he was working in the world, they had no desire that I should start a mission or I should make the world a better place or I should reform society. They had none of those ideas. They were in contact with the reality, with the self in them. And spontaneously, the words of wisdom just fell from their lips. Wherever they went, their idea was just to give the knowledge. And they did not even have any goal or any particular ideal that I want to make this world, because they are beyond our goals. They are beyond all desires. They did not see that this wise person is working with a particular desire, while a person of achievement has not even that desire to reform the world. He says, I should just spread my knowledge, whatever the Lord has given me. They have absolutely no ego. They have zero ego. And they are constantly in touch with the divinity. And the words that come out are so powerful that they inspire millions. See, in his lifetime, Christ talked to how many people? Buddha talked to how many people? Shankaracharya traveled. You know, he did travel to other parts of the world. But still, their influence is so much more that even after they are gone, years after they are gone, there are billions of Christians, billions of Buddhists. Our Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda, you know, in his life, he inspired people. He traveled all over the world from 1950 to 1993. 43 years he traveled throughout the world, you know, spreading this message and inspiring people to work. After he left, people thought the Chinmaya mission will close down because he was the Chinmaya mission. Actually, it has grown. It has doubled or tripled because his student who ran the mission, Swami Tejomayananda ji, said, he said, until now, Swami Chinmayananda used to work. Now his name will work. See, the name has more power than the individual. The individual is gone, but the people he has taught. So that is, these are the people of achievement who do so much, but a lot of it is done after they have passed, because their words, their wisdom, their knowledge. And why do they do that? Because they have this ideal, and the ideal is that this Lord's message I should pass on to the world. So that is what they are saying, that we should evolve from a laborer, at least become a worker, you know, at least let me make the society a better, the world a better place. To become a person of achievement is not easy. We can't do that, but at least let us change our life from laborer to worker. And ultimately, maybe some people may, you know, become persons of achievement. And as I mentioned, Mahatma Gandhi was one such person who was so inspired when he came back from Africa and he saw how Indians were suffering under British rule. And he was so inspired, he gave up all, you know, his work, his law profession, even he left his, hardly took care of his family, and his goal was to benefit. And same thing, he inspired people like Martin Luther King and Nelson Mandela, who also sacrificed everything they had for the betterment of society. So how can we do this work? They say, I get so tired, you know, work is so hard. And especially nowadays, there's so much stress, and all the time people are on the computer, on the internet, and their mind is full, you know, with all this knowledge, and, you know, this, and at the end of the day, I'm exhausted. I don't want to do anything. The example they give is of a farmer and an office manager. So this is not the current farmer, but say a few years back, when still in some parts of village in India, the people use bull and plow for farming. They use bulls. So this farmer wakes up early in the morning around 5 or 6, you know, has his breakfast. and then walks 2.5 miles with his bulls and with his plow, you know, carrying his plow, heavy plow, and pushing his bulls. They walk to the field, which is not next block, 2.5 miles. So he walks 2.5 miles, goes to that field, and he hooks up the plow and to the bulls, and then he pushes them, moves the bulls to plow the field. And all day in the hot heat, he's there working, he's cleaning the field, removing the weeds, plowing the field. And then at 12 o'clock, he's so exhausted with the heat. So what he does, he takes a short nap, you know, whatever food his wife has made, a simple lunch, he has that. And then after about half an hour, he's again back to work. And till 3:30, he works with, you know, with all his strength. And he comes home and he's sweating, he's hot. What does he do? He comes home, takes a bath, maybe has a, you know, simple meal, and then he goes out with his friends and they're singing music, or he's playing with his children in the yard, or running around, or they're singing till late in the evening, or he's just, where does he get this energy? You know, he has worked hard all day, but just a short rest of a half an hour or so revives him, or a shower, and he's ready to go work again. And after he has worked hard in the fields all day, on the other hand, look at an office manager. He goes to work in his car. He takes the elevator up to his 9th floor office. He has not walked a mile, not even a step from his car. He parks in front of the office, takes the elevator up, sits in the office all day, air conditioned, you know, beautiful, you know, comfortable seat. And yet he's worried. You know why? Because he's worried about his job. You know, the profits are going down, the company is not doing well, and the CEO is on my tail, and he's checking on me. He's coming today for a visit, and he's going to ask me about productivity and about the, and then these office staff, they don't work that well, and there is this problem, and I've lost my assistant, and how am I going to hire a new assistant? So by 5 o'clock, he's so exhausted. By the time he goes home and his wife says, honey, come on, let's go out for dinner, or, you know, let's go out for a movie or a show. He says, no, I'm tired. Don't you realize I worked so hard all day? What has he done? Nothing. He has just sat in the office. But it is the mental stress that has exhausted him, while the other guy who has worked so hard in the hot sun is still ready to go out with his friends and sing and dance and all. So the difference is that one's work is free of stress. And so the problem today is not physical work. The problem is mental stress. So how does mental stress come? Again, by when I'm working just for me or myself. But if my goal is I'm doing what is good for the company, I'm doing my best, I'm working hard, and the results are not in my hand. All I do is do my best. And ultimately, if I succeed, fine. If I don't, I did my best. And I keep learning. It does not mean that you don't progress, you don't learn, you work as hard as you can. But the goal of life is to help others, to serve the world, to make the company a better place. And so such an individual, the job is not important. It's not what you do. It's the attitude with which you work in the world. And so one has to change one's attitude. Look at the same problem can be looked at, you know, from a negative perspective where, oh, this problem is so bad. Or every challenge can be considered an opportunity to improve. See, when problems come in life, you can either consider, oh, it's such a problem. Why do I have it? Why is God punishing me? Why is he this and that? Or this is an opportunity for me to improve and let me learn from this. Why has this problem come? Why has this difficulty come? Why do I have stress? So work can be a joy or can be a sorrow depending on the attitude. Talking about work reminds me of a little story. I told it a while back, but I like it so much, it's worth repeating. So this man and a woman, just two of them, worked in an office, and that boss was real tough, you know, constantly wrote them and do this, do that, constantly yelling at them and all. And they were tired, you know. They said, this is too much. So one day the girl says, you know, I'm going to let the boss give me the day off today. He said, are you kidding? He never will give anybody a day off. He says, watch. So So when the boss comes in that day, they used to come an hour before the boss. When the boss came into work, she's hanging from the ceiling. So he says, what are you doing? She says, I'm a light. I'm a tube light. I'm lighting up the room. Boss says, you know what? You have been working too hard. You know, you are getting crazy. You're stressed out. You can go home, take the day off. So she packs her bags, picks up her purse, and she's smiling and out the door. So this man starts following her. So the boss says, where the hell are you going? He says, I can't work in the dark. So that is the situation, that any situation can be made a good situation. Everything depends on your frame of mind. So the goal of life is to remove the negativities, remove the negative tendencies like anger, heat, greed, jealousy, fill the mind with positive, just as a garden. Or in the book, Swamiji gives an example of a house, that you have bought a house which had been unoccupied for a long time, and you know, it was not taken care of. The homeless people started living in there, and the house was full of dirt and filth and everything, and you bought the house at an auction very cheap. But the house is a mess. So what do? You first put a fence, put a lock so that nobody comes in, and then you hire people to come in and clean the whole house, remove the dirt, paint it, you know, do fresh, you know, curtains and, you know, all that. You paint the windows, but that's not enough. You then have to fill the house with good furniture and good furnishings. So similarly, the mind, which is full of negativity, is not enough to clean it, but to fill it with positive. So that is the goal of this talk. And that is what they say, it's not only good to have two weeks ago when we met, we talked about how to silence the mind. So it's not only enough to quieten the mind, but one has to fill the mind with positivity and become a positive influence like all these great saints before us. So it's a very inspiring message. I try to share it with you. Yes, go ahead.
Same place.
Right.
But what you have done is changed.
Yes. But I think what it requires is constant alertness.
Yes.
Even though you have planted flowers, but you have to constantly be alert that weeds don't start coming.
Yes.
Pluck them out. Be very alert. So similarly, the mind, you may think, you know, I have achieved so much. I'm such a great person. I'm so good. I'm doing so much. And then it becomes very easy to relax and say, you know, I'm such a wonderful person. I do so much for. One has to be constantly alert, because the ego is so subtle. It is so tricky. You don't know when it arises. So one is the ego of, you know, I'm rich, I'm very powerful, I have a big house or a big better car or a better, I'm the CEO. But there is a subtle ego that I'm such a helpful person, I'm so good, I'm so kind to others. You know, I think even those who were here in the Sunday class, I talked about the wizard, you know, who got proud of his ability to help others. So that is a subtle ego which can arise. So one has to be very watchful that don't let that, even that ego arise, that I'm able to help or I'm able to serve, and be constantly alert. And the moment these ideas come, you know, pull them out. So they are the weeds, that the weeds of arrogance, weeds of pride, weeds of, you know, yeah. So it's a constant process. It's not once you have planted flowers,
no,
you can't let it go. You have to constantly plow your, you know.
You can water it and plow it and then weed out every night.
Right. Exactly. Put fertilizer. Right. Right. So same way, the mind has to be constantly nourished with positive ideas. And so that's why listening to lectures, you know, that's why, you know, like we have all the time acharyas, teachers coming. So come and listen to them, because listening to them is like planting flowers. The positive ideas you can get, because they have a lot more knowledge than we all do. So listening to these teachers is a way of filling the mind with positive ideas, positive thoughts. But thank you for that. Anything else?
filled with all of the knowledge that I've gained through this philosophy. And thank God, you know, I'm here today, and that was part of my path.
That's how you grow. Look at that as an opportunity. If you can work there, you can work anywhere.
Yes.
Right. So I think every chapter. Plus, I think he sends us, what I have found, that God sends us situations that we need.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is some deficiency in us. You need it maybe to have develop more patience and more understanding.
Yes.
And so every problem that comes, it is a reason that I needed to learn from this. And if you have a situation where, say, you have to take care of a sick mother or something like that, and where you have to show patience because, you know, they are yelling at you and they are not clean. So maybe I needed that patience. Maybe I needed that growth. So and look at the reason. Why was I get placed in that situation? Because the totality, you can call it God or you can call it, needs me to go through that situation to grow, to learn. Yes. So instead of looking at it as a negative experience, why did I have to go through that?
So asking him how it is to be a farmer. So he said, actually, and that is the labor class.
It's the same thing, yes. No, nature is a very beautiful healer. If you spend time in nature, because she doesn't judge, she doesn't compare, she just accepts what you are. And there's such a silence and such a peace. I always tell in my classes that spend time alone just with nature, and that's the greatest healer, the greatest companion you can have, is being with nature. Right. I think constant exposure to this knowledge helps. That's what I find, you know, because constantly, and you know, I'm blessed that because I have to teach, so then every evening I'm actually preparing, because we have a study group on Wednesday, so Monday, Tuesday I prepare for that. And Thursday I do this, Wednesday, then Friday, Saturday I prepare for Sunday. So I'm blessed and I'm making notes. So, you know, the Lord has placed me here. I never went to any school, never took any classes, never went to Bombay, you know, to be an acharya. And I just got placed here. And really, I all the time feel thankful to the Lord and to Gurudev that because of them, I have this ability. And every evening, my mind is just filled with these thoughts. And it is so wonderful and such a blessing. Because every evening I have at least an hour or two I have to work. And so either I'm delivering the talks or preparing. So it's like Thursday, I have my afternoon off. On Thursday, I don't work. So I come here early and I just sit here and prepare my talk and, you know, have a cup of tea. And then just the silence of this place is so beautiful. I meditated today for a while. It was really nice. Yeah, thank you. Today, we'll do the breath, meditate on the breath. So put your hands above your nostrils on your forehead. I think this one should do every day before you start meditation. You will find this helps to quieten the mind a lot. So close the right nostril and breathe in and out slow and deep through the left nostril. The way I do is, because I'm a Shiva devotee, so I do Om while Om. Namah Shivaya. So Om to breathe in, then pause, Namah and Shivaya. So take a mantra that has three and then just breathe in deep. Hold for a second. Breathe out. Three times, left nostril. Now you can do the Father, Son and Holy Ghost, or, you know, Guru or whatever, you know, Vahe Guru or something, and take any mantra and then just split it into three. Three times through the left nostril. Now three times through the right nostril. Deep breath in, hold, breathe out. Hold, breathe in. So take a pause between inspiration and expiration and inspiration. So breathe in, Om. Namah Shivaya. So when you breathe with a mantra, then your mind is even more purified. Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Now we'll alternate. Breathe in through the left, pause, breathe out through the right, pause, breathe in through the right, pause, breathe out through the left. And same way, use your mantra for inspiration, pause, and expiration. Slow and deep, there's no hurry. Pause. Again, pause. Now bring your hand down. And just keep breathing in and out slowly and deep. And let your mind go into the silence. Become aware of the Lord within. In that divinity I am. I am not this body. I am not the mind. I am not the intellect. I am not even the desires, the vasanas. I am that supreme reality, Om. Occupying this body. This body is my clothes that I wear, but it's not me. That is what I am. Connect with that I, the higher I, the supreme I. Not with ego, but with humility.